Hello and welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Jack Manuel, all the way in Australia today. How you doing?
Jet lagged and happy that I got to watch the Nets game because, you know, it might be 3 a.m. when I started watching, but at the same time, like, you know, I'm going to step up and watch the Nets game. And it almost paid off, but unfortunately, LeBron James just too good.
Yeah, a real shout out to Jack. He's a true warrior, staying up to watch his, well, being up this late to watch a game. His time is all messed up, but the Nets couldn't pull it off. Another close loss, something we've been accustomed to the last three games. But before we get into that, just a reminder, you can listen to the Brooklyn Buzz on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and now airing on Dash Radio. But Jack, initial thoughts of that 121-114 loss at home to the Cavs?
Promising to start, Nick. The first three quarters we looked really good. Our offense was flowing. But we just didn't really have the cattle to sort of keep up with guys like Kevin Love, Rodney Hood, and obviously LeBron James. The defense was good at times, but then a little bit lackluster. You know, there were some times where we had some nice double teams and sort of forced some turnovers. I think at the rebounding, somewhere that hurt us, Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love, those sort of guys. Even the offensive boards as well, they got second chance buckets. But, you know, overall, a good performance. I think we said that probably about 20 times this year in terms of, you know, in the close losses. But at the end of the day, these would look a lot better if we get the W. And I think we certainly played well enough. In fact, I would say we were probably the better team for at least 2.5 quarters. But that 1.5 quarters just is where, you know, the Cavs, who are an elite offensive team, were just too good for us.
Yeah, like you said, you know, most of the game we were in the lead or, you know, hanging around in there. For three quarters, we were either ahead of the Cavs or tied with them. It was just that fourth quarter they outscored us 35-25. And like you said, it was that closer LeBron James just stepping up, something we don't have. The defensive, you know, liabilities we do have out there too. We were talking about it off the pot a little bit. D'Angelo really struggled. They attacked him in the pick and roll, specifically George Hill and that LeBron combo. The Nets couldn't really help because the Cavs are spreading the floor so well. So it's just like that lack of defense is definitely an issue for the team at times, especially getting stops late in the game. And then the offensive end, getting those buckets that you really need, not relying on so many tough shots or three-point balls, just getting in the lane and getting some layups and getting the foul calls. Because we saw the Nets get a lot of free throws early in the game, you know, especially in that first quarter and second quarter, but they didn't really work as much at the free throw line later in the game, and especially in that fourth.
Yeah, and I think that was partly to do with just the element. There was an element of passiveness towards the end of the game, and I'm not sure whether that was just due to the rotations. Like when we saw Joe Harris out there, Spencer Dinwiddie, those sort of guys were attacking quite a bit. You know, Joe Harris saw some extended minutes, obviously. I will ask you first about his game because I will probably speak for far too long that people will switch off. But before we do, I think, yeah, the passiveness and towards the end of the game and sort of settling for jumpers and the rotations by Coach Kenny, you know, I'm not saying that they were the worst ever, but, you know, Dante Cunningham had one of his worst games in a Nets uniform. D'Lo had probably one of his worst games of the season, and yet those guys were sort of out there in the crunch time. I'd much rather see him ride the hot hand a little bit. But a guy who did definitely have the hot hand was Joe Harris, Nick. Now, was this Joe Harris's best game ever, let alone just as a Net?
Yeah, I mean, I think this has to be his best game ever. I mean, I don't know about his college career, but in terms of the NBA, 11 of 14 from the field, 6 of 7 from 3, 5 defensive rebounds, 2 offensive rebounds, 2 assists, only 1 turnover, a steal. He seemed to just make a ton of plays when the Nets really needed to hit a lot of threes. It seemed like he had a little, like, thing going with J.R. Smith. Like, they definitely probably went at it in practice. So this was a little bit of a revenge game for him. And happy to see Joe Harris go out there and light it up and just kind of, I mean, I didn't even know Joe Harris had a 30-point game in him. I'm sorry to say that, Jack, but I mean, I thought mid-20s, you know, would be an area he'd stop at. But 30 points for Joe Harris is a big game, and it kind of sucks we didn't win on a night where one of our role players just lit it up.
Yeah, it was. And I think Ryan Rucco mentioned towards the end of the game that it was his second game ever. I think he had one 30-point game in college. So the fact that he was able to produce at such a high level against such a quality outfit, yes, the defense of the Cavs can be lackluster at the best of times, but J.R. Smith has been known to be a capable defender, and he absolutely blew him out of the water. There were just some rotations that Joe Harris just made the best of. You know, he read the play, he read the situation best, you know, took those threes when he needed to and made them, and, you know, he drove to the line and made some great... His work around the basket is something that is just something that is just almost unforeseen. Like, if you'd have been doing a scouting report on Joe Harris before the start of the season, it certainly wouldn't be like, you know, protect him from getting inside the paint because, you know, he's a jump shooter. But now, you know, he's almost developed that to a point where it's like you have to keep him out of there because he's become very crafty and very, very adept around that sort of 2 to 5 foot range.
Yeah, I mean, last year, that's not something we saw a lot from Harris. Maybe the occasional cut, wide open layup type of thing. But Yes Network showed a stat during the game that he's second in the league in drive percentages behind LeBron James, shooting 50% on drives. So that's a crazy number for somebody like him who's not overly athletic. I know Kenny said he's kind of built like a football player, so he's probably stronger than we think. And he does a great job, you know, playing angles and using the backboard. Occasionally he gets blocked, but a lot of the time he hits him with a nice pump fake or something. He even called LeBron once in this game. So impressive night from Joe, impressive day from Joe Harris.
Yeah, and this via Nets PR, the first Nets reserve to score over 30 points in a game since Brook Lopez in 2013. He had a career high at 6 3-pointers as well. So to be in the company of one of our favorite players ever, Nick, is certainly no small feat.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, at that point, Brook shouldn't have even been coming off the bench. That I'm 90% sure that was the Lionel Hollins days, and he was just, like, benching him for no reason, and he was scoring, like, 20 nightly off the bench. It was a weird situation. So, like, shout-out to Joe Harris for just putting up these numbers. But you mentioned Dante Cunningham. He's been great for the Nets. Like, he's definitely had some really nice games and more than I thought he would do after the trade. I thought he was kind of just a veteran piece that would come in there sometimes for AC, but he's been great tonight. Today, not so much. 2 of 7 from the field, a couple missed layups, an air ball layup, an air ball three, just kind of seemed out of sorts. The Cavs guards were really able to eat him up in the paint a little bit. There wasn't really much of a rim protection from him. And some of it's on him, but also I kind of wish I saw Jared Allen out there a little bit more late in the game.
Yeah, late in the game, it certainly would have been nicer to see Jared Allen out there. He had some nice plays. You know, his ability to switch in the pick and roll as well. You know, his rim protection is certainly one thing. Sort of, you know, LeBron James was getting to the rim at will at a lot of the times. Now, that was also due to some lackluster switch defense from the Nets. But Jared Allen, you know, I think, you know, Coach Kenny mentioned in previous games, and we mentioned on our last few episodes, that he's sort of seen him hit the rookie wall. So he's certainly managing his minutes somewhat. You know, Dante Cunningham is a capable sort of veteran presence. But I think I mentioned to you off wax just before the pod that I'd like to see Coach Kenny ride the hot hand a little bit more. You know, D'Lo was getting minutes that he probably didn't deserve. Dante Cunningham was getting minutes he probably didn't deserve. But they were sort of just getting, you know, getting gifted them because, you know, they have the name, so to speak. And they have, like, you know, they've been playing well in the past. But, you know, today's game, they certainly didn't deserve to be out there for large stretches. You know, airballed threes, you know, missing, you know, gimme layups and stuff. But, you know, it wasn't certainly, you know, his performance that, you know, lost us the game. But it would have been nice to see. But, you know, at least 15 or so games with us, he's been great. So 1 out of 15 bad performances, you know, you're going to take that.
Exactly. And the fact is, too, is like Kenny just doesn't really have a ton of rotations that they're out there. Like the guys who didn't play today were Quincy Acey, Mozgov, Okafor, and Stauskas. And I think Isaiah Whitehead might have been called up, but I'm not 100% sure. And those were the guys that didn't play. Everybody else saw like pretty good minutes. The only like I think maybe you could have gave Dinwiddie minutes that D'Lo had late in the game because Dinwiddie probably had one of his better games. But based off of the way Dinwiddie's probably been playing the last 2 weeks, his confidence was kind of iffy. He also took a bad shot that I believe pissed Kenny off because then he took a timeout after that and benched him. I saw LeVert do a similar thing too where I think LeVert made a mistake on something and then Kenny wasn't too happy about it, instant bench. So it's just like I think when we talk about the rotations, I know – I've been mad about them at points, and I know Nets Twitter's like freaking out about them and like all types of things. Like Kenny's a bad coach. I've seen that. But I think we also have to remember in a sense too, is that the Nets really don't care about winning right now, especially at this point in the season. Like there's no playoffs. They're not going to get 30 wins. Like I think he's just really testing out guys, seeing what they can do. And I also was like thinking to myself and talking to one of my friends in the sense that like, you know, you kind of get a, you know what somebody can do when they're playing really well. Like, you know what their skill set is. Like, when D'Lo's playing really well, we know he's dropping threes, dishing to his teammates, hitting those nice bounce passes. Like, when he's in rhythm, kind of has that easy offense. I think Kenny in the Nets organization, the coaching staff, kind of want to see some of these guys when they struggle and see what they can do. If they can bounce back from these situations, they want to move forward with guys. Because I think you can learn a lot about a player in a struggling situation than you can about, you know, an easy situation.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a very good point. You know, you see the best out of players when they're struggling. And I think that's one thing about D'Lo that I'd like to see more of. Like, you see him impact the game in different ways. This is why Nets Daily, the best Twitter page, apart from at OTG Nick. limited sample size, 14 games, but Dante Cunningham's numbers with the Nets are the best he's put up in 5 years. He's shooting 47.2% percent from three, which is obviously a best ever. He certainly wasn't nailing them tonight. But yeah, he's been good. I'll throw something at you, Nick. A lot of Nets fans on Twitter and in general are upset about the lack of Jahlil Okafor time we've seen. Do you think that, you know, Dante Cunningham getting 15 to 20 minutes, those minutes, you know, tonight maybe could have been given to a Jahlil? You mentioned the fact that we're not out there to win the games, and we've spoken about Jahlil at times before. But, you know, it's interesting to see why he's not getting any games or any minutes for that. You know, he's getting DNPs, and I'm not sure the reasoning behind it. You know, I'm not sure if any reporters have been asking Coach Kenny about it, but do you have a reasoning on your end? I mean, you're one of the most expert people I know when it comes to Brooklyn Nets.
I appreciate that, Jack. I think, you know, it's a combination of things, and I saw tweets like this too before, is Brett Brown didn't play him for a long time in Philly. Kenny's not playing in Brooklyn. There's a reason why he's not playing. It's not like everybody hates Jahlil Okafor. He doesn't seem like a bad guy off the court. So I think it's just his play. Like, imagine if Okafor was out there today, they would just get him in pick and rolls, and he just can't move that well, and they would just expose him. So I think his fit, like, he can match up against certain teams. Maybe I would have liked to see him play a little bit against Charlotte or Memphis when they're kind of a slower team and they really have an interior presence. But tonight, today against the Cavs, I keep saying tonight, so I'm used to it. But today against the Cavs, like, he would have just got exposed all over the floor. Like, he couldn't have even really defended anybody, maybe except Tristan Thompson. Like, Kevin Love would definitely expose him. The Cavs would expose him in pick and roll. I think Okafor's fit, especially with a Nets team that doesn't have elite defenders. Like, we've mentioned D'Lo getting exposed in this. Just imagine having D'Angelo and Okafor out there. You put those two in a pick and roll, it's an instant bucket for the Cavs. So I think the Nets can't afford to play a big that just lacks mobility like Okafor at this time, especially with the way their defense is, because so many guys get blown up off ball, on ball.
Yeah, I think you make a good point about his, you know, lack of sort of, you know, athletic and agility capabilities there. I think Charlotte would have been a good point to play him, sort of see him, throw him against, you know, Dwight Howard, who was having that absolutely monster 30-30 night. See what he can do, you know, sort of as we were mentioning before, test a guy at, like, you know, the hardest of situations. Tonight in the Cavs game, it probably wouldn't have made a lot of sense because we were in the game for the entire thing and sort of gifting Jahlil minutes at a point where it wouldn't have made any sense. Like, you know, Dante Cunningham has played well for us, as we just mentioned. And, you know, he was poor tonight, but, you know, he fits in terms of where we're going and our style of play.
So you have to respect him at least at the three-point line. You know, even if he's not hitting, like, there's some respect you're giving him.
Exactly. And we mentioned for over 47% in the 15 games or so. I'm going to want to see, you know, Jahlil at some stage, you know, maybe against these, you know, lesser teams, against teams maybe who have a more traditional center. I think he can play a little bit better there. But, you know, Jahlil's future, we talked about it on previous podcasts. It's going to be interesting to see where he is going forward. And it doesn't look like it's looking increasingly more and more likely that it's not going to be out in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it necessarily, like, we talked about it early in the season before they even made the trade, when we were thinking, like, you know, is this a trade the Nets should make? And the fit was always a question. You know, getting a second round for free pretty much for Trevor Booker, who isn't expiring, obviously that hurt the team in terms of wins. Like, I think that was a really underrated trade that, you know, hurt with veteran presence and, like, lacking having another good big. But in terms of getting a second round pick for the future, you know, taking a flyer in Okafor, maybe he came to Brooklyn, he, like, changed his game and he really worked at it, but it just hasn't seemed like that. And I think, like, people have to remember, like, they're watching Okafor in practice. Yeah. The Nets don't have terribly talented bigs. Like, Jared Allen is a good player. He's going to be a great player. But right now, he's not an amazing center, and he could easily get bodied by Okafor. The other bigs on the roster are Cunningham, AC, and Mozgov. If Okafor isn't really working them in practice, why should he be getting playing time against other teams when they probably have better bigs than we do?
Yeah, and I've just looked up something via the New York Post. So he told the New York Post, in relation to his lack of playing time, they haven't specified anything. The message is just stay ready, continue the work, but they haven't told me why I'm out of the lineup or what I have to do to get back in the lineup. So I'm going day by day working. You know, I think Coach Kenny mentioned in the past as well that, you know, his overall game, like, he's sort of the old school sort of center. You know, it just doesn't work in today's NBA, you know.
You have to be really good at what you do.
You have to be elite at it, and he's not elite at it, and he hasn't proven that in any situation, whether that be in Philly or in Brooklyn. He's had moments, but, you know, moments are fleeting. You know, you're not going to be able to sustain an NBA career on moments. You know, he needs to get, like, as we've mentioned before, like, elite in one skill, like, whether it's rebounding, whether it's scoring or something, because at this stage, you know, the NBA is going to pass him by with the way that it's going. And I wish him well, but at the end of the day, it's in terms of our Brooklyn Nets, you know, I don't see a place for him.
Yeah, I just like the fit is a question mark, especially having to have Mozgov on the roster already. Not saying I love Mozgov or anything, but you're not going to get rid of that contract. And I'd rather have a big that they could play that was mobile, someone more similar to Jared Allen, or just a veteran out there that can kind of do the small things, play defense, rebounding. Rebounding was a really – it's just been an issue for this team in general. You know, against the Hornets, Dwight Howard killed them. Today – they didn't get killed on the boards. 49-38, actually, you got killed on the boards, especially a few of those plays. LeBron was going up for a layup, and then he just got his own miss and put it back in. And I think at times it's, you know, the lack of talent, lack of size in the paint, but also the guards just need to crash. Like, they need the help on the boards. And we've seen that happen at times where they come down, they're just tipping the ball. You see five nets down there. Maybe you're not getting in the fast break offense you need to, but you're getting the board and completing defensive stop and at least giving yourself a shot at the other end.
Yeah, we look best when we're out in transition. When we're moving the game quickly, we're sort of getting the ball into the open court. And, you know, to do that, we need to, you know, be controlling the rebounding. And I think, you know, in part, it has to do with our size. You know, we mentioned Jared Allen not being out there. You know, other than that, you know, we don't really have any guys above 6'8". You know, Dante Cunningham, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, you know, those guys, Damari Carroll, they're not above 6'8". You know, we didn't see Quincy Acey out there tonight either. So there was really, it's about the team rebounding as we specified before. And Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson are both elite rebounders. You can say what you want about Tristan Thompson as a player as a whole, but he is one of the best rebounders when he is on. So I think that certainly hurt us. It may have been, you know, the difference between winning and losing, because you look at the percentages in terms of from three and from the field and in terms of getting to the line, there were a lot of similarities. And you can probably just say that it was LeBron James. But at the end of the day, we played well enough to win this game. And unfortunately, there were just a couple of key areas that stopped us from doing so.
Yeah, I think they needed to do a better job. And, you know, in the second half when LeBron was on the bench and there was no LeBron out there, I think they really needed to capitalize. You know, he put up a monster game. You're not going to stop him. You're just going to slow him down. And the Nets were kind of like in a weird situation, because if they double teamed him, he was hitting George Hill in the corner for a three. If they left him single coverage, he was working to the lane, either getting an and one or just getting an easy layup. So it was just like they really don't have a LeBron answer on their roster. Most teams don't, but the Nets didn't really. I would have actually wouldn't have mind seeing the Nets throw like a zone defense at the Cavs at one point where they were just getting abused and they had no answer for anything they were doing. Like, I think once in a while, just throw, like we mentioned, experiment with defense. You did it against Houston earlier in the season. Why not? Like, you really have nothing to lose. Kenny said it before the game. The Nets are in a situation where they face the Cavs. They can play free. There's no pressure. It's all the pressures on the Cavs to beat them.
Yeah, either zone defense or just switch everything. You're like, you know, if LeBron's going to beat, like, Spencer Dinwiddie down low, so be it. You know, make a switch, do the double team. Just be a bit more communicative on that end of the floor. I didn't mind
the buckets.
Yeah, make them earn it. And I didn't mind, you know, I think Damari's probably the best one-on-one defender on our roster in terms of for small forwards and power forwards of the elite nature. But obviously, you know, he's aging and, you know, his body is, we know LeBron James spends millions of dollars on his. But Damari Carroll, you know, and I think when he got switched on to Caris LeVert as well, he just bullied him down low, just went downhill. So I think there's plenty of teams that'll suffer against LeBron James, you know, whether they be teams like us or, you know, teams in the playoffs as well. It may have been a huge factor in contributing to our losing, but, you know, he's also one of the best players of all time. And, you know, if he's going to beat you, I guess it's going to happen.
Yeah, and, like, honestly, for some weird reason, LeBron, like, gets up to play the Nets. Like, I think Ryan Rucco said before the game, he already has two triple-doubles on the Nets this season. It always seems like he has something extra. I remember against, you know, the Nets in the playoffs a few years ago with Paul Pierce on the team still, he lit him up. So, I don't know. I think LeBron just has, like, a little extra vendetta for the Nets for some reason. Maybe he just kind of wants to own Barclays Center.
He likes being in New York, I think, man. You know, whether it's in the Brooklyn Borough, whether it's in the New York Borough. Apparently, LeBron James had, like, 3 hours sleep last night. I had 3 hours sleep myself. I'm jet lagged, and I don't know if I could put it at a 35-point near triple double. But you know, he's a freak of nature, one of the greats, best we've ever seen. And I think we are cherished to be able to see a guy like him out there. But you know, I think going forward, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, is this a tool to learn going forward for the Nets in terms of how we sort of work on our defense? You know, who are we going to be picking up in the draft? Is it going to be a guy who has some defensive capabilities? Because we have a lot of guys on this roster who aren't really elite defenders in that sense. You know, do we pick up someone who's an elite defender in the free agency market? You know, we've got a little bit of space there. Do we look for a guy who's like a pure defensive type, like a Tony Allen? Obviously, a guy with a bit more youth on his side, but maybe, like, you know, do we go after a guy like a Justice Winslow? there's certainly a lot of questions about like the makeup of this Nets roster and how it's going to be looking going forward. But, you know, there's a lot of positives as well. Like, you know, we're seeing things from Joe Harris, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie, Rondell Jefferson, Damari Carroll. You know, it just sucks to see, you know, the down and the lulls occasionally sort of override those positive moments.
Yeah, I mean, for a game where, you know, Caris LeVert didn't have a great game, you know, in terms of scoring, he did have 7 assists. You know, we mentioned D'Angelo didn't have a great game. Rondé was a little bit all over the place. Like, he had some really good moments driving the rim, a couple mid-range ones. Also, defensively, he struggled a little bit on LeBron. Like we said, everybody will. He did have 5 assists, which I love. Damari started really hot, but he really didn't, you know, keep scoring the rest of the game. And I think that kind of hurt the team. It was just like, other than Joe Harris, everybody was kind of all over the place this game.
Yeah, it was a bit of a haphazard performance from the Nets as a whole. You know, there were moments. I think Caris LeVert had some nice highlight moments. You know, his off the dribble work is something that's really been really nice this season. Yeah, it's been beautiful. And, you know, he's passing out of that as well. And, you know, he's taking the shots. And while not all of them are making, he looks comfortable in that, which is a good sign going forward. Because, you know, if he can start to, that's what separates you from being an elite offensive guard as well. And I mean, you know, his body's going to fill out, as we know. You know, he's got that lankiness to him, which I think is a strength in terms of like his ability to sort of, you know, get deflections and steals. But, you know, to be more solid and sort of hold his own against these bigger guys is going to bode well for the net, because we're going to be playing this small sort of switchy game. And if that's the case, guys like Caris LeVert are going to have to fill out. But, you know, the moments, if we had got a little bit more from all of those guys, we'd probably get the W as well. So the fact that we still weren't at our best and were able to challenge, you know, one of the top Eastern Conference teams is certainly a good thing.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. I mean, over the last, you know, few games, which we'll talk about right now, obviously the loss against Charlotte was terrible. You know, blowing that lead, allowing Dwight Howard to really work you like that. I think that's some of the roster just being limited in the sense they don't really have options to put out there that they can work offensively, defensively. Also, the Nets missed plenty of free throws, turned the ball over, took bad shots in the second half. Like, they're just not used to having a lead. And that comes with experience. And, you know, the Hornets, they're definitely a more talented team. They have more experienced players. Excuse me. And the Nets kind of took their foot off the gas. So that's a learning experience, whatever. Toronto, they played them great. You know, like taking a 4-point loss to Toronto in Toronto is almost like a win for the Nets. And I think they missed like 11 free throws in that game. You know, they take care of the free throw line, hit some shots, that's a different game. So I think, you know, there's plenty of positives to take from this experience. Instead of just being like, oh man, the Nets lose another close one. Like, Kenny doesn't know how to manage them, or these guys suck. Like, you know, they're losing a lot of close games, and you could at least assume half of these close games next season with the jumps that we know players make in the Nets, you know, facility and the organization that they've worked with guys like Joe Harris and Dinwiddie in the summer. Like, I'm excited to see what they can do this summer and turn some of those close games into wins next year. Next thing you know, they're a lot closer to 30-plus wins than they are to 20-plus wins.
Yeah, it's a glass half full sort of proposition, Nick. Like, you know, we maintain that sort of rosy outlook because there's no point in dwelling on the negative aspects, because where is that going to get you? You know, you obviously, you know, you reflect on it in a way that's positive and see if you can take what you can from things like, you know, how do we defend these elite big guys in the post, like a Dwight Howard? Obviously, that's just going to be an issue for the Nets until, you know, Jared Allen sort of fills out his body and they maybe get another rotation player, similar to like a Trevor Booker type or Dante Cunningham. You know, maybe sort of plays that role a little bit more. But I think in terms of going forward, Nick, where do you see next season? This is sort of looking forward. What's the sort of win total you're looking at? What would be like a best case and a worst case scenario for us?
I think there's just so many variables, and I think we'll talk about it more in the offseason. But just based off of right now, I mean, draft pick wise, I think that depends a lot too. Like, it's tough to say if they're going to be able to get a player that really can contribute late in the draft like they have with LeVert and Allen, especially with Toronto looking like they're going to have one of the best records in the NBA this year. So that's a question mark. Also, I think the second round picks, I'm expecting at least one, you know, international stash. Like, I think out of the both of those picks, I'm thinking one guy at least probably gets stashed internationally as a guy they kind of work with and, you know, some of the players they already have. And then the Jeremy Lin situation is something to kind of keep an eye on. Like, if Lin plays, I think people forget, like, Lin is a good player. Like, even if he's not the starter, like, he was great for Charlotte off the bench. Like, when they made the playoffs that year, him and Kemba were great. They really worked well together. And, like, we've only seen him one game with D'Angelo Russell. So I think that's, you know, another variable. What do they trade for him? Or if they do trade him, or if they keep him, do they trade Spencer Dinwiddie? Like, I think there's just so many variables. It's really hard to predict. If you took this same exact team, like say no Jeremy Lin, and you were playing the same roster, and they just have one offseason of work, I think they'd probably get over 30 wins next year.
Yeah,
I think improvement, like LeVert is taking. I'm loving what I'm seeing from LeVert. There's just so many little small areas in his game that he keeps improving on. That's going to make him a more complete player for next year.
Yeah, I think you make good points there about the fact that, like, you look at this roster as a whole, where it is right now in terms of youth. Now, there's going to be natural progression in that sense as well, but there's also progression that could come from adding a guy like a Jeremy Lin. Like, you know, veteran presences on our roster are hugely impactful.
Team chemistry, too.
Team chemistry as well. You know, look, Damari Carroll, in terms of his team chemistry and leadership, has been a huge impact on guys like Rondo Hollis-Jefferson and, to an extent, D'Angelo Russell when he's been at his best. You know, Jeremy Lin out there, I'm sure it's going to have a great impact on guys like Caris LeVert and D'Lo. It just makes, you know, we've talked about the breadth of talent that the Nets sort of lack. And adding a guy like Jeremy Lin, who, you know, is a quality player, you know, he's not a top 50 player by any stretch, but he's one of the best players on our roster in terms of, you know, his experience and his ability to sort of prove himself in those big moments. So, and also, you know, in terms of drafting, I'm interested to see him. We're all praying for the fact that, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks stay in that eighth position so we can get that extra second round pick, because we know that the Nets drafting and development is always a real positive. So hopefully, you know, we can pick up some nice guys, whether we stash them in Europe or whether we keep one of them, or whether we, you know, we pick up another vet and take on some money or something like that. Because, you know, Sean Marks is a master of roster chemistry and roster composition. It's going to be interesting to see what he does in this offseason. It's really crucial to see how that happens, because the Nets' future could depend on it.
Yeah, and I think one thing, you know, you look at this offseason, I've mentioned this before, I think, on the Outlet and on the Buzz, you know, the Nets are one of seven teams, you know, pegged to have cap space this summer. So that puts them at a premium. Cap space is going to be hard to come by. It's going to be, the Nets are going to be able to probably take another salary dump if they don't see anybody they want to go after in free agency or kind of make some moves that way. So that's a really nice advantage for the Nets to have that other teams won't have this offseason, where they can maybe add someone like a D'Angelo Russell, maybe not quite as talented, but a draft pick that somebody's trying to move on from. Maybe in a, you know, there's just guys across the league where you could see they'd come to Brooklyn and maybe have a better chance. And like you said, we could sign somebody. And you hinted at this before. I kind of like the idea of going someone defensive with the first round pick. Like, I wouldn't mind drafting another big. Like, I don't think that's a terrible idea, especially if it's like a stretch four that can play some defense. Like, I think that's a position where the Nets really need to attack.
Yeah, there's been lots of talk. You know, I think our boy with Flatbush in Atlantic has been advocating for a Jabari Parker move. I'm not as sold on that.
Risky.
It's very risky in terms of the proposition. I think you've talked about it on the Outlet as well. You know, his field of future with Milwaukee looks a bit hesitant. But, you know, in terms of Brooklyn, you know, we can't just sort of take a flyer on these guys. It's about the fit as well. And I think that's something that Sean Marks and Coach Kenny are about in terms of how they fit into our culture. We've mentioned in the past the fact that, you know, you're building a culture, and with that is going to come success. You know, Steve Kerr got into a situation, as he mentioned on Howard Beck's podcast, that he had the success already there, and he was able to build his own culture that sort of fed the success as well and fed it further. We're building culture, and hopefully that culture breeds success. So with that, we need to pick the right guys and the right sort of character guys. You know, Jabari Parker's had his issues with Jason Kidd, but, you know, even us Brooklyn Nets fans, we've had our issues with him as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. You know, Aaron Gordon as well is going to be a free agent. There's a lot of these sort of guys from that, toward the 2014-15 draft, around that range, that are coming off. But I'd rather just see the Nets sort of make some clever, smarter moves. Hopefully, you know, we re-sign Joe Harris to the max that he deserves. Not obviously that's throwaway, but hopefully we can keep a guy like him, because, you know, his impact in terms of, just in terms of his own game, and then also in terms of the game and the Nets as
his
a whole.
Toughness just too.
He's the perfect six man. He's like, you look at, I think we've made reference to him and Korver and JJ Redick before, in terms of, you look at the guys like them, you know, Kyle Korver, like 35 years old, JJ Redick, like 33 years old. I'd really like to keep Joe Harris as a Net for life, just for my pure irrational love for him. But at the same time, no matter where he is, he's going to have a long future in this league.
He's a perfect role player type for this type of NBA. He's not, like we've said, he's not an elite defender, but he puts in a lot of effort. He's tough. He's able to kind of guard some guys. He'll drive to the lane. He's really improved. His passing's improving. His three-point shot is probably only going to get better because he's just going to keep putting in reps and putting in the work. So Joe Harris is a guy I definitely don't mind keeping around, but I wouldn't be surprised if somebody offers too much money and the Nets don't feel it's necessary to match at this time with the roster they have. And like you mentioned, with Jabari and Aaron Gordon, I'd kind of like to see the Nets maybe do what they did a few seasons ago where they offered Crabbe and Tyler Johnson, the two guys they really wanted offer sheets. They didn't, you know, they were their teams matched. They didn't sign them. And instead of going to spend money irrationally on other guys, they kind of just stood still and kind of filled out the roster with some vets. Like, I wouldn't mind if the Nets did that again. Like, if there's nobody that's really striking them to hit in free agency, sit on the money, sit on the cap space. It could help you in the, you know, during the season around the trade deadline as well. And then kind of worry about the next, you know, off season. There's no rush. Like, it's not like, you know, signing one player this season is going to guarantee the Nets in the playoffs or anything, or it's like make or break year for Brooklyn. Like, they already know the last 3 years have in a sense been a throwaway because they haven't had their first round pick. Like, next year they'll have their first round pick. Hopefully it's not a high lottery pick, unless, you know, maybe we miss the playoffs by one game and we get lucky and win the lottery. But other than that, I don't want a top pick. I'd like to see them kind of continue to try to win, and I don't think it'd be a terrible thing. You know, this definitely needs a star, but I don't think I'm not 100% sure D'Angelo can't be a star yet. I'm not 100% sure Caris LeVert can't be a star yet, because I think, like, there's not really much of a ceiling on LeVert because he continues to add more to his game. And one thing I've really seen from LeVert that could be a game changer is his ability to shoot the ball, shoot the three off dribble. Like, if he can pull up and shoot three off dribble on a pick and roll with his ability to pass inside with somebody like a Jared Allen, like, that's a big game changer for him.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll throw another guy at you, Nick. Darius Saric. Now, the Sixers have some really nice cap space going forward. Yeah, I like him a lot as well in terms of that sort of stretch four. His defense certainly isn't, like, you know, the best, but in maybe Coach Kenny's system, that could improve. Now, he's a guy that sort of has some youth on his side. You know, if the Sixers are looking to move him to make a big splash on a guy like, you know, who knows, Kawhi Leonard or Paul George, those guys could be free agents going forward. And, you know, the Sixers have that cap space, and they're certainly on the verge of, you know, sort of hitting the ceiling as one of the best Eastern Conference teams. And, you know, the Nets could pounce on that. We've made moves with them before with Trevor Booker and Jahlil Okafor. You know, there could be a possibility. Do you think that he'd be a nice fit in Brooklyn, you know, say if he becomes a restricted free agent or an unrestricted free agent?
I think he would become a nice fit in Brooklyn. I think I like his game. I remember watching Saric before he even really developed and just being like, you know, this kid's a baller. Like, he just wants to kind of compete and win the game. And he's helped the Sixers in a lot of different ways. Like, his passing's a little bit underrated. His ability to shoot the three this year has been great. He just has a couple, like, nice, you know, niches to his game where he kind of keeps getting better too. He wouldn't be a guy I wouldn't mind having around. The contract obviously is, you know, a defying factor for anybody the Nets signed, but he's definitely a guy I could see the Nets having a lot of interest in.
Definitely. And for me, he's almost like an elevated version of Bojan Bogdanović. You know, he's got some height. He's got a little bit more athleticism to him. You know, at Cable Hoops, I'm sure Corey will probably argue to the cows come home with us about that because he's been doing some great things in Indiana. But, you know, Dario's would be a nice fit. But there's certainly plenty of interesting times ahead for us and Nets fans in general.
Yeah, I mean, I know the Nets are kind of stacked on the wing. I mean, one guy I don't know if they would trade him, but the whole situation in Orlando is pretty messy and bad, and he's not on a bad contract, would be somebody like Jonathan Simmons. Like, I've liked the development he's had in his game. He's not super young, but he's, you know, he's still young enough, and he plays defense. Like we said, defense is an issue for this roster. I think defensively, they need to add some more talent, and that could be just guys stepping up, like you mentioned, the weight room. You know, there's at least four guys on this team that are going to benefit from the weight room a lot. That's D'Angelo Russell, Caris LeVert, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Jared Allen, and you could probably toss Spencer Dinwiddie in there. Those guys are not super small, but they definitely would benefit from the size. And you mentioned LeVert. I know I love LeVert, if you guys couldn't tell by now. He's my favorite player on the Nets, and I have really high hopes for him. And I think with him adding size, it wouldn't really matter as much because of his long strides. Like, your strides aren't going to get any shorter if you add muscle. And he does a great job using his strides down low after he does that hesitation move where he kind of stops and then he just takes one really long stride and just lays it in. I think another move a lot of the Nets could probably work on, Rondae uses a little bit, and, you know, we see Spencer do it, a scoop layup. Donovan Mitchell's really mastered that. I think some of the young Nets could add that to the repertoire as well.
Yeah, definitely. And you checked out Jonathan Simmons, the name that I really like. Another former Spurs guy that I think, you know, not necessarily is, you know, on the move by any stretch, but if they look to sign Kawhi to the max, you know, the lack of sort of flexibility they have on their roster going forward could be an issue. So it could force out a guy like a Kyle Anderson, who I really liked, and I think B-ball breakdown.
I like him too. I like him in a Nets uniform too.
He'd be really nice. B-ball breakdown, clutch points, who I'm writing for now, did a really nice sort of profile piece on him in terms of just his all-round ability to sort of fill the holes in lots of different ways. His passing, you know, his shooting is getting better, and his defense is very good in terms of, you know, his size and stuff. I think they call him slow-mo in terms of his ability to sort of have that pace about him. But I don't mind that. You know, pace isn't the number one thing in today's NBA. You look at a guy like a Van Vliet, and D'Angelo Russell certainly doesn't have elevated pace about him. But, you know, you control the game, and you don't have to have, you know, John Wall, Russell Westbrook out there, athleticism, to have an impact in the NBA. And I think Kyle Anderson is a guy who I'd really like. I'm sure there'll be plenty of other names going into free agency, but, you know, there's definitely plenty of possibilities for the Nets going forward and how they build this roster.
Yeah, Anderson definitely would be a guy. I'm sure Sean Marks probably is familiar with him being from with the Spurs. Yeah. But I think the Spurs will keep him. I've heard Popovich kind of go out and say, like, he's done nice things, especially in games. And, you know, if Popovich likes you, there's a good chance the Spurs are going to keep you.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the old Pop. If you got the blessing from him, I think Danny Green's been playing for like 12 seasons and still hasn't got the blessing from Greg Popovich yet. So the fact that Kyle Anderson's got that already, I'm sure that they'll look to sign him. You know, it was surprising to me to see Jonathan Simmons leave, but, you know, with what's happening with all the Magic right now, it'll be interesting to see if he's going to be kicking around for much longer, because, you know, Coach Frank Vogel is certainly on the hot seat, as I mentioned with Nick Buzik on our latest GBT. So there's certainly, you know, there'll be a lot of moves that Sean Marks will be making. He'll certainly be on the phones, and, you know, I'm confident, as we've said before, we trust in what he's going to, how he's going to build this team.
Yeah, and I think, you know, then people have to understand, like, the roster right now Sean is building, it's like there's a lot of nice young pieces on it that we definitely didn't have before, and there's faith and hope for the future where, like, you know, some of these guys could possibly become all-stars or above average starters, in a sense, where so now, like, they're even adding more talent, and giving Kenny a better roster where he can actually win games will probably be the goal for next year. Like, I think this year, if healthy, going to the season, the Nets hope to have Jeremy Lin and Trevor Booker for the whole year. Like, long as they were competitive along the way, like, they maybe would have traded them if they got great offers. But I don't think going to the season, they're like, all right, we're going to move Booker for Okafor. Like, I thought they thought that they'd probably be competitive and win some more games. Because if you know, I would probably argue if you had Jeremy Lin and Trevor Booker on this team, Nets might pick up, you know, let's say 8 more wins. Like, it's a real possibility with all the close losses they've had. And we've seen Trevor Booker on the boards really eat, and then the refs really screwed us a couple times. Having veterans out there kind of give you a few more calls too.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think in terms of the veteran presence and how, you know, Damari Carroll certainly won us a few games with his, you know, consistent performances. It can't be underestimated how much the impact these guys have on rosters. Especially young building rosters. You know, you look at it in Philly right now, a guy like JJ Redick is having a huge impact. Marco Bellinelli is having an impact off the bench for those guys. You know, I think in terms of the balanced roster, you know, you're not going to take away necessarily away from the young players in terms of their development. It's just going to enhance theirs if they're the right fit and the right culture. And I think, you know, that's what the Nets are all about in terms of culture, culture, culture. So I think that, you know, Sean Marks will certainly find the right guys for this system.
Exactly. Well, that wraps it up for today. Thank you, Jack, for hopping on. As always, thank you, everybody, for listening. You can catch the Brooklyn Buzz on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OGBasketball.com, and, like we mentioned, now airing on Dash Radio.